This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz with my co-host, Adam Emmert. And this week's guest has been offering daily views on college football and the NFL draft with the Seahawks slant on SeahawksDraftBlog.com. He's also a sports journalist for BBC Radio Sheffield. You can find him on Twitter, at Rob Staton, S-T-A-T-O-N. Rob Staton joins us. Thanks for coming on the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So let's get right into it. A week ago or so, you had a post up on SeahawksDraftBlog.com talking about the potential of the Seahawks making a play for Ndamukong Suh. You know, I think we've all kind of talked about how cool that would be, but really, what would that mean for the Seahawks defense to have a player of that caliber added on the defensive line?
Well, the one thing that he's going to provide wherever he signs is you're going to get an every down interior pass rusher. He's going to play as well against the run as he is the pass. You know, he's very stout in the middle. But he's just a terrific player. I mean, he's a genuine superstar in the league. And I know that his reputation is that he's a dirty player. And that's always going to be part of Ndamukong Suh. But the reality is that players like that, you know, opponents hate to play them. And I remember seeing an interview with Kyle Long, who's the Chicago Bears guard, and he just said, when you're out there, you don't get a snap off. I mean, it's every single down, relentless pressure, whether it is against the run or the pass. If Seattle was to bring somebody like that into their defense, it would turn – I mean, let's be right. They have an exceptional defense, and that is why they won the Super Bowl last year, and it's why they came within a play of winning it this year. But Suh would make a great defense, an exceptional defense into a legendary defense. They would have a chance next year to, you know, to be as good as the 85 Bears. I don't think that they're quite there. They could get there with someone like Suh. That is the difference it would take. But of course, he's going to cost a lot of money. He's going to get a contract, which is probably worth over $100 million. It's just whether or not it is realistic at all to expect the Seahawks to sign a player who is going to command that kind of money.
And we've kind of seen some projections of the fact that they could make it happen, but it would mean losing. It kind of sounds like Byron Maxwell may not be coming back anyway, but then you're losing maybe some of those key mid-tier contracts in the $3, $4, or $5 million range where you have key players currently.
I think the one thing that they're going to do, which, you know, this is just a guess from me, just a projection, I think they're going to be quite ruthless over the next couple of years. I think that there's going to be players who, and maybe getting towards the back end of their careers. And you look at someone like Zach Miller, Tony McDaniel, you know, even Brandon Mebane, as good as Mebane has been for Seattle, he is coming off a pretty serious injury. This isn't just a standard hamstring tear. You know, this is a very serious one. And they're going to have to sort of look at guys like that and say, okay, we can give them a $5 million salary this year, or we can save that money and invest it somewhere else in a younger player who's going to give us more, maybe over 3 or 4 years, instead of just having that Mebane for another year. So I think that they are going to be a bit more ruthless than we expect. I think the turnover over the next few years is going to be crucial, because they want to be paying the right guys. Now, if they are willing to cut a few extra players to make it happen, to say you've still got enough room to keep Russell Wilson on a nice big contract, to keep Bobby Wagner, to keep Bruce Irvin, who for me became just an incredible playmaker last year, just really just shone and just developed so much. They need to keep guys like that. You know, if they can make enough room to get a Suh in there. And also the other thing is, this is Seattle's championship window, isn't it? I mean, I know that they're going to be a good team for a while, but they're a Super Bowl winning team. Guarantee, we've seen it for the last 2 years. They are in the midst of a 4 or 5 year window where it's get as many titles as you can. And the best way to get a title, I mean, they couldn't do any other move to put themselves in place that would match bringing in Ndamukong Suh. That would be the best possible move. It's a fantasy that we it's kind of getting us over the Super Bowl. The idea could happen. It's perhaps not realistic, but it would just, I mean, the city and Seahawks fans all over the world would be I think they would be finally be able to move on from that final play if they see Sue in a blue jersey in a few weeks' time.
Sure. Now, where do you come out as far as going for a great player on the defensive line like Sue, or potentially going for a number one type receiver? Because there's a lot of those guys in free agency this year, whether or not their respective teams can hold on to them. You know, guys like Demaryius Thomas or Dez Bryant, those caliber of players. If you could have one or the other, which would you choose?
I would rather have Sue, just because Sue is just turned 28. I think you're going to get at least 4 years quality production from him. And I think that some of the projections are that maybe he could join a team where the deal is essentially something like 4 years, maybe $55 million. It maybe gets revealed as a 7-year deal, which does top $100 million. But essentially, he's going to get sort of $50 million over 4 years, you know, most of it guaranteed. So I think that's the kind of ballpark you're looking at for a guy who for the next 4 years is going to be at the top of his game. Then you're looking at a guy, maybe I think that Dez Bryant's going to get franchised. I think Jerry Jones would rather cut everybody on that team who's Dez Bryant. We've already seen Henry Melton is going to leave.
Right.
He will do. He did it for Romo. You know, he was very ruthless with DeMarcus Ware, wasn't he? And one or two others. So I think he will do whatever it takes to keep Bryant. I think he'll let Murray leave, the running back, and let him test free agency, and maybe they'll look to the draft for a running back, but they'll keep Bryant. I think that Denver's got something like $34 million, something like that, in cap room, so I think they'll franchise Demaryius Thomas. Mm-hmm. I think Brandon Marshall's going to be available via a trade or via free agency if he gets cut. I do think Arizona will find a way to keep Larry Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. but if he becomes available, another great option. There's one or two others out there. You know, I think that Randall Cobb will stay in Green Bay. Everybody knows the list of guys that are out there. The thing is, if you bring someone like Marshall in, isn't he? He's 30, 31. He's already sort of beyond maybe his peak. And if you bring him in, you might be looking at 2 or 3 years, good production on a team that doesn't throw that often. I think with Sue, he's going to be out there most of the downs, which is unreal for a defensive tackle. They usually spelled more than anybody. He's going to be out there every down for the defense. Marshall, yeah, you know, maybe gets 5 or 6 targets a game, really helps that offense. But I just think that the draft is so filled with receivers. Why not just get a guy who you're going to pay less than $1 million a year to play receiver and find Sue, if that is an option at all?
So, Rob, if the Seahawks didn't go ahead and spend free agent money on upgrading the offense, and whether that's at the receiver position or the tight end position or the offensive line, which are probably our weakest groups on the offensive side of the ball, the Seahawks have drafted offensive players rather highly the last couple drafts, whether that's their second round pick with Christian Michael, their second round pick with Paul Richardson, and it's kind of busted. I mean, not that those guys are bust per se, but they haven't come and been impact players. Do you see the Seahawks going offense early again in this draft?
I think we're going to find out exactly what they're going to do in free agency. For example, if they bolster the defensive line in free agency as a priority, and it doesn't have to be, I mean, maybe they bring someone like Jabal Sheard in from Cleveland, who's a great player. Maybe Stephen Pyre, great interior run block, and has really come on as a pass rusher in the last year as well. You know, maybe he would be an option for them as well. If they go down that road, then I think, yeah, it opens it up. And this, one of the strengths of the draft, again, is receiver. And maybe there's a sweet spot in rounds 2 and 3 where Seattle could really target that position. I think in round 1, you could see another receiver, could see tight end, could see offensive tackle. I just think it's stacked up. There is a lot of defensive talent in the draft, but I think it's going to go very early. I think we're going to see loads of pass rushers go in the first 15, 20 picks. I think we're going to see the defense, you know, there's loads of defensive tackles. Shelton at Washington is going to go early. Phillips at Oklahoma is going to go early. We're going to see Malcolm Brown at Texas go very early. Eddie Goldman's going to be gone. And when you get to sort of the 31st pick, as much as you might want to push it in that kind of direction and go defense again, I just think that the value is going to be there more so for the offense. And yeah, you know what? Some of those picks didn't work out the last couple of years. And I don't think we should be afraid, as good as this front office has been, to criticize and say, hey, do you know what? Maybe they didn't make the right move. You know, the Harvin trade was a mess. You know, it's been a disaster. It was a bad move. Christian Michael's not worked out. Paul Richardson, yeah, you know what? He showed in flashes, but there was a lot of other rookie receivers who did a lot more than him last year, and he had the history of the knee injury already. And there maybe were better options that Seattle could have taken last year. I think that we have to be a little bit critical on that. They haven't made the most of the last two drafts. They've got to make sure that this draft now, as they try and replenish some of the weaker areas in the team, try and replace players who've done a good job for them over the years, they have to hit on this draft.
In your latest mock draft, Rob, you have cornerback Jalen Collins of LSU going to the Seahawks. Is that partially your thinking that Maxwell could be gone this year?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he will go. I mean, I think the thing with Maxwell is, unfortunately for Seattle, he is he's going to earn just a little bit too much. So whatever they're figuring, I think he's probably worth $4 or $5 million as a salary. I think he's a good cornerback, but I don't think he's an exceptional cornerback. I think he's helped by the coaching and the scheme in Seattle, and I think that he's obviously helped playing alongside three of the best defensive backs in the league. I mean, who wouldn't be helped by that? So I think he's probably good for 4 or 5, and I think he'll probably get 6 or 7 on the open market, and they're going to have to make a decision. The other thing is that Seattle's been so good at finding cornerbacks, haven't they? Whether it's at round 4 with Thurman, 5 with Sherman, 6 with Maxwell, Brandon Browner from the Canadian Football League. And they probably feel like, you know what, we could sign Brandon Maxwell for $6-7 million, or we could go and find the next guy. And if it, you know, if Jalen Collins is there in round 1, I think you have to consider it, because he's such a special player. He's one of the best in this draft. He's going to really, I think after the combine, his stock is going to explode. He is an incredible player, incredible potential, received a really high grade from the draft committee despite only playing 10 starts, which is unheard of. You don't get high grades if you only play 10 games. So I think he's going really high.
Well, I was going to say, Rob, I was a little bit surprised because I saw a mock draft with Todd McShay who has Collins going to the Ravens at 26. And, you know, if you've seen the Seahawks draft the past few years, usually they pick somebody in the first round that's, you know, down around round 2 or 3. So I was surprised to see you mocking somebody that high.
Yeah. And the thing with him is that I think in the last couple of weeks, he is really getting a lot more attention in the media. I think maybe some of the guys like, you know, McShay, for example, afforded a bit more attention to him recently and has seen exactly what he's about. And he's gone from a guy who's kind of under the radar to all of a sudden, I think he is going to get pushed up. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that maybe the lack of starts, you know, the fact that he's only played 10 starts, mm-hmm. hasn't got a load of production. I think 3 interceptions in his career. He left LSU and they didn't try to bring him back. You know, they didn't recruit him that hard because they've got so much defensive back talent at that school that they were like, okay, you want to declare, you go ahead. And I think that maybe that combined would have created a situation where he goes first. If I'm planning on doing another mock draft either before or just after the combine, and I was going to put him at 16 to Houston. I think he's going to go a lot earlier than 31.
Sure. So the combine is coming up this weekend, and what are some of those players that you would say for Seahawks fans to watch out for? You know, especially if they're looking at wide receivers, or maybe they think that the threat of Marshawn Lynch retiring is real. Maybe there's some running backs to watch out for. Who are you going to be watching this upcoming weekend?
One of the first guys I'm going to be looking at is Trey McBride, who is at William & Mary. He's about 6'2", 205 pounds, and he's just, you know, he just ticks every box. He's got enough explosion off the snap to separate with speed. He can get downfield, take the top off defense. He can high point the ball superbly. He just makes so many circus catches in college. And against the bigger schools that he played, he showed up against West Virginia in 2013, 3 huge catches, 3 chunk plays, really exciting talent, exceptional character as well. So I think the Trey McBride, number one, keep an eye on that guy. Small school guy, but could easily go late second. He's as good as that. I think in terms of other wide receivers, I'm not a huge Jalen Strong fan. He's at Arizona State. Because separation's a real issue for him. And I think one of the things you need as a receiver is you need to be able to get open in ways in college that, you know, it needs to be able to translate. And when you watch him in college, there's college defensive backs and safeties are just glued to him. He just cannot separate, doesn't drive off defenders. He's almost constantly relying on fantastic hands, a great vertical to make catches. But if he can just show a bit of speed and a bit of explosion, broad jump and 40-yard dash are big for this guy. If he can show that, then, you know, you've got something to work with there. He needs to show that he's got the potential. He can coach him up to separate rather than he just can't do it because he's not fast enough. So I'm going to keep an eye on Jalen Strong. Running backs, you know, it's a really good class of running backs, but there's only really two that I can see I would want to replace Marshawn Lynch, and that's the two that are going to go in the first round. Melvin Gordon, who is incredible, Russell Wilson-esque with his personality.
And also out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's funny, isn't it? And it's almost like he's taken on the Wilson persona. I mean, that's how he is. I mean, he will go out and in his yard at 3 o'clock in the morning and do a workout. And then he will send his teammate a text. This is the legendary story that you get at Wisconsin. He sends a text to his teammates at 3 a.m. saying, "What are you guys doing? I'm getting better." And he's a gym rat. He just goes to the all-night gyms. He's just constantly working out. Looks that way because, I mean, he's incredibly athletic. Mm-hmm. And I could just see it'd be very different back to Lynch. But all, you know what? They create some lanes in Seattle, and sometimes Lynch, you know, as great as he is, he doesn't exploit them because he's, you know, and burst and, you know, exploiting those gaps is not Marshawn Lynch's game. Whereas Melvin Gordon's going to shoot straight through them. It's going to be 20, 30 yards every time. And then there's Todd Gurley, of course, as well, who is just a beast. You know, he's 230 pounds and runs like a 190 pound running back. So, that's another one. I mean, other guys you could list. I think the cornerback position, if people want to look deep, at cornerback as well, keep an eye on Damian Swan from Georgia, who's long, big playmaker, just made loads of plays for Georgia, had a great final year there. Alex Carter at Stanford's another one to keep an eye on. And Eric Rowe at Utah is another guy to keep an eye on there.
Now, are you concerned at all about guys like Todd Gurley and injury history?
I think it has to be a concern because the problem with Gurley is, he's got the ACL, but he has had a tendency to just get banged up a little bit, not just with a knee injury. Mm-hmm. And when you've got guys who are, the great thing about Lynch, and one of the reasons why he stayed healthy for so long, is that he's not a big back. You know, he's a smaller back who plays big. He's just got unbelievable strength. Now, Gurley is 230 pounds. He is tall and big, fast, and players like that generally tend to get banged up a little bit more. So, yeah, you can compare him to the physical style of a Lynch, but Lynch is, you know, we're never going to see another Marshawn Lynch. I think he's totally unique. We are never going to see a guy like that ever again. I think it is a genuine concern with Gurley, but the thing is, you just watch him play and you just can't help but get excited. And when you watch him run like he did last year when he was healthy, you just, you know, you want to take a chance. And he draws you in. I'm glad I don't have to make the decision on passing on the guy like some teams do, because it's going to be hard to pass on. But, yeah, that is a legitimate concern.
Well, one thing that I think that must be very difficult about your job with the blog, Rob, is just that good luck trying to predict what John Schneider's going to do. I mean, he's kind of a magician of pulling guys out of a hat that you've never heard of and it would never think to look at. How has that affected the way that you look at the draft? And have you ever felt like you've gotten a feeling for some of the things that he's looking for?
To be honest, I think by now we've sort of been, we know John Schneider and Pete Carroll enough to sort of say, well, we kind of know what they're going to do. And by that, you mean we have no idea. and I don't really try. And you know, I know there's a lot of the draft media thing is about being right this many times, or, you know, getting a draft correctly, or calling a pick and everyone going, "Hey, you mentioned that guy." And to be honest, the great thing about the blog is it's a great community. And from September, when the college football starts, we have guys on there all the time, you know, commenting and joining in the debate. And I've no doubt that by the time the draft comes around, one of the Seahawks picks will have mentioned. And, you know, in 2013, we spent a lot of time talking about Jordan Hill, for example. And it was great to see him doing well this year, and people could go back and say, "Hey, you know, this is how he played at Penn State." And I remember us having this conversation. And, you know, last year there was one or two, you know, people like Joel Batonio, who we identified as a potential Seahawk. drafted, but he still had a great year. So part of the fun in the draft is not so much trying to guess what Seattle's going to do or trying to even begin to get into John Schneider's head. It's really just about talking about a bunch of different guys, watching their careers progress. And hey, if Seattle takes one of the people we talked about, then great. We know about them and we can enjoy watching their careers develop. Hopefully, they have a successful time in Seattle, but I think it's just fun. And almost the fact that we don't know what Seattle's going to do, it kind of adds that bit of extra after the draft, because you can go back and look at a Paul Richardson and go, hey, we didn't spend that much time on this guy because we didn't expect them to take him. So now we've got a couple of weeks of tape to get into and new conversations to have about it.
So speaking of John Schneider, he had an interview on with Brock and Salk just this last week, talking about guys who finish plays, and that's kind of an indicator for him to tell him how much they enjoy playing football, because that's one of the things that we've kind of seen. You've talked about the not really knowing what they do, but we also can kind of see a trend in some of the players that they do go for. They really like to find guys who like to play football, and they like to find guys who have overcome some sort of adversity just in their short career. So is that anything that you are looking for, or how do you, are there any other things that you just can't measure?
There are little things that you can do. I think one of the most underrated things that, you know, I think that anyone can do who's interested in the draft and wants to get to know potential Seahawks picks is to go on YouTube and look at interviews with players. And you can often find out a lot about players and the way that they speak to the media or features they've done for TV. Now, a lot of these are managed, but if you put a player in front of, and you know, it's the Marshawn Lynch fact, you put a player in front of five or six unfamiliar faces and ask them to do an interview, how are they going to respond to that? And let me give you an example. Like, there's a guy who I really like for Seattle, and if he's there at the end of the first round, I hope they take him, because he's called Eli Harold, and he's a pass rusher from Virginia. And he ticks every box physically, you know, lean, length in terms of arm length, explosive pass rush, a perfect Leo style prospect. And then you watch his interviews and the way that he speaks about his coaches, the way that he talks about the game, the adversity. He had a lot of adversity as a young guy, a dead in the family and having to cope with that. He's a former five-star recruit. And you look at this and you piece all these things together and then you watch him play and he clearly loves the game, the way that he plays football. He just finishes every play like John Schneider was talking about, never takes a snap off. And when you pull all those things together, you say, that's the kind of guy that we should be focusing on. That is the type of player that Seattle has taken so far. It doesn't mean that they're going to take him in this draft. I personally think he's going to go in the top 10 because he's that good. But if he doesn't and he's there at 31, that's the type of player you're looking for. You know, one of the biggest misses, I think, from last year was that we focused a lot on Cody Latimer, who was a fantastic, tall, physical wide receiver. But then when you watch him seeking interviews, he's very timid, a bit shy, you know, a bit reserved. And you just think, yeah, you know, in hindsight, could you really see him going up against Richard Sherman in practice all last summer? And, you know, you probably couldn't. He probably would have swallowed him alive. So I think if you're looking for receivers as well, it's good to see sort of those vibrant personalities, alpha male types, mm-hmm. who are going to get in there. They're just going to get in there and they're not going to care what the person across them is saying. They're just going to get straight in. And that's one of the reasons why I like Trey McBride and Max Williams, the tight end at Minnesota. They're cocky, but they're confident and they're personable and they're ready. I think they're ready to go into an NFL locker room.
So we've talked a lot about receivers now. One of the big things about Seattle, the talk is they've never really had that guy who's the true number one, and that's who they were looking for when they went out and traded for Percy Harvin. They wanted that guy who's the true number one. Now, do you see Seattle finding anybody like that based on the position that they're drafting in at number 31?
It's going to be really difficult because you've essentially got three really good receivers in Amari Cooper, Kevin White, and Devante Parker, who are going to go in the probably in the top 20. Then you have a long list of other receivers who they all have a great skill. For example, Jalen Strong, high point in the ball, vertical jump, great. But doesn't separate like I talked about. Then you've maybe got someone like Nelson Agholor, who great punt returner, gritty, determined, but you know, he's kind of skinny. And how fast is he? And then you just run through the list. Sammy Coates looks like Terrell Owens in pads. Catchers like Luke Wilson, you know, his hands are really inconsistent. Brashad Perriman is who's like the flavor of the month at the moment. You watch him play, oh yeah, he's running around and he's making all sorts of plays, and then oh, he drops one when he's wide open with 20 yards of space in front of him and a touchdown's there to be had, and he drops the ball. So you're essentially at 31 going to be saying, what trait can I live with? You know, am I going to take the speed guy? Am I going to take a Coates or a Perriman and say, I can work with the hands, or I'm going to try and work with the hands and hope that they turn into, you know, the potential that they show in terms of athleticism? Or am I going to take Jalen Strong and just accept that he's never going to be a burner? He's never going to drive separation off a defensive back. But you know what? If we throw it up to him in a one-on-one, which Seattle faces a lot in the second rounds, you saw in the NFC Championship game and in the Super Bowl, he's going to go and make a catch. So you're kind of picking your poison, but there is nobody there who you could say that is a number one star receiver. And the problem is that, you know, Seattle wants special qualities, which is what they were looking for with Harvin. Mm-hmm. And I don't really see a receiver who stands out with that really special, oh my word, this guy is going to just, that is an elite talent. I mean, you've got the speed guys, you've got the hands guys, you've got the size guys, but you haven't really got anyone to push together. The closest is probably Dorial Green-Beckham in terms of the overall special package, but he has got so much character, legit character baggage. And it's about what anyone says, it is legit. You know, he has got real issues that he has to, the teams are going to run a mile from, I think, because of the Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice angle to the 2014 season. I think it's going to mean that he sinks an awful lot, but he's perhaps the one player who, if they want to take a chance, if he's still there at 31, he's the nearest thing in terms of size, speed, upside, could be incredible, but can you trust him? And I don't know whether they're going to take a guy like that to put with Russell Wilson when he just earns $100 million.
Sure. Well, Rob, I really want to thank you for coming on the show, and I agree, as much as difficult as it is to really predict what the Seahawks are going to do, it is fun to follow some of these players. I'm not a guy who watches a lot of college football during the regular season, so it's this time in the off season when I can read your blog and get to know some of those guys that I hadn't watched during the season, and that way when the draft rolls around, I have at least a little bit of an idea of who's available when and can get kind of excited about particular picks and who the Seahawks might take. So I really appreciate the blog, SeahawksDraftBlog.com, and thanks for coming on the show again, Rob.
And, you know, I just appreciate everybody who, you know, who comes on the blog. I mean, I'm just a guy in England who loves the NFL and loves college football and have the opportunity to, you know, through a very patient wife, to write this blog on top of my day job as well with the BBC. And it's just great to be able to talk Seahawks every day, talk draft with everybody who visits the blog. And, you know, let's look forward to another great draft. And hopefully next year, we won't be one play away from the Super Bowl. We'll go all the way this time.
Indeed.
For sure.
All right. Thanks again, Rob. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.